Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
And Josh was unfortunately unable to make it due to work commitments. I know he's really bummed because it's a big episode. It is episode
69, dudes!
You asked for it. I had to get it.
Yay!
Barry, yes.
That makes me so happy.
All right, well, our main topic is going to be Watchmen this week, so we won't be talking about when theatrical releases hit. But before we get kicked into all that, what did we watch this week?
I looked at Office Space, since Office Space also, I'm big on anniversaries. Office Space turned 10 years old just recently, and yeah,
it ages beautifully. So well.
Yeah, in fact, it's more relevant now than it was 10 years ago. Certainly anybody who's ever had that kind of a job, and I know I certainly have. Anyway, watching Office Space, it's not as funny as it used to be for me, because I used to have one of those, used to be a customer service representative at one point, and yeah, it's...
Did you have your own, like, Bill Lumberg?
Yeah, I had a Blumberg, I had a...
Did you have a David Brent?
I had a Michael Bolton. I had one guy who was so angry, I really thought he was going to come, like, pack in heat one day. So...
Crazy load letter. What the is that? Love that. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Classic.
Yes. All right. Is that pretty much?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. I caught up on The Office. That was really about it. I've done a lot of reading. I read some Watchmen, decided to abandon that about three chapters in, and got the new Dresden Files book. So that's been taking up a lot of my time.
Cool. Where are you in Office now? Jim and Pam together? Or?
No.
Okay.
Spoil it, Barry.
Sorry.
I just finished the Booze Cruise.
Okay, excellent. That's one of the best episodes.
Yeah. So I'm going to have to pull some of that, which that's what she said, a clip drop for that, because I'm sure we'd never have use for that around here. Never, ever. Anyhow, that's really about it. That's kind of sad. But oh well. Ethan, what about you, sir? You got to pick up the slack.
I didn't watch a lot either, though I watched The Ice Storm.
Oh, good film.
I think it's my new favorite Ang Lee film, to be honest. I thought it was fabulous. I felt it had this really strong sense of realism, but also, like, when it's important with movies that are depressing, you have to kind of have a sense of humor, too, I find. And I think this movie did that very well as well. And, yeah, I think there's, like, a huge difference between a movie like this and a movie like Revolutionary Road, for example. So...
Cool.
Completely agree. I think it's definitely one of Ang Lee's best films, and I think it gets really underrated, while Brokeback Mountain got seriously overrated.
I'm surprised it wasn't nominated for like a single Oscar.
No joke, especially for the performances. I think it's one of Kevin Kline's best. Joan Allen's fantastic. Sigourney Weaver's terrific. Yeah.
Yeah, the kids are good too.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah, everybody, Katie Holmes and Tobey Maguire, everybody's good in that film.
It's in my Netflix queue. I just haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
It's dark stuff, but man, it's beautiful. Beautiful film.
Right on. Did you catch anything else, sir?
I also watched Around.
Let's take the time to talk about that. Yes. What did you think about it?
I'm gonna take into account that it's a first film, right?
Okay. Yes.
But it felt very kind of breezy. I just didn't feel a lot of tension throughout the story, and a lot of times it didn't even feel like he was in film school at all, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough.
And I kind of the scene near the end with him and his mother in the hospital was incredibly well done, and I think towards the end the movie really finds its voice and becomes very well written and acted and interesting. So yeah, it's not without its merits. It's just, again, it's a flawed first film.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Yeah, I've read quite a few reviews, and it's almost it could be said that you want to get through that first half hour to really get into the meat of the story. But it's kind of like you have to have it there. But I don't know. I liked it overall though still. But yeah, cool. Well, I'm glad you found some good stuff in it as well. Is that it for you, sir?
Yeah.
All right. Well. Let's talk about what hit theaters this week.
Well, Zack Snyder's Watchmen opened up to a record Friday night of $25 million. That's huge. And then ended with a $55 million box office, which is disappointing.
Not so huge.
Well, I thought it was going to make more money than 300. I really did. I was wrong. Dave is right. Tokyo, on the other hand, opened up in one theater. One of the vignettes of this three-part anthology film is directed by Michel Gondry. That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
I thought it'd be like a spiritual successor to Australia.
Wow. Per Chatem, yes.
Yes.
That just hurt my brain. Thank you, Ethan.
Okay.
All right, let's jump into the DVDs because we're making up for it in DVDs for what didn't come out in theaters.
Well, Sean Penn's Oscar-winning performance in Gus Van Sant's Milk is on DVD this week.
Okay, just quick note. This is a Focus Features DVD.
Yes.
And Focus is one of the worst studios when it comes to releasing DVDs because they release a bare bones edition. Then like a year later, they release like a pimped out 2-disc special edition. So, you know, if you're interested in buying Milk, wait like a year.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. That's what they did with Pride and Prejudice.
Focus put out a Lost in Translation, right?
They did.
So that's like the one exclusion to that.
Well, I'm still waiting for like the definitive Lost in Translation because I like the DVD they put out, but I still wanted more.
Yeah, yeah. But there was more on it than it was like they're like we're going to put a lot of stuff like everyone else is, and oh wait, we can milk this.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Oh, that was unintentional.
Very
too,
nice,
folks.
Dave. Very nice.
That kind of hurt. Sorry.
Good stuff. Pinocchio, the 2-disc 7 years old. The 2-disc 70th anniversary platinum edition is coming out.
Now, here's something I don't quite get about this one. You have the 2-disc regular and you have the 2-disc Blu-ray. The 2-disc Blu-ray comes with the DVD version as well.
Hmm.
So I don't know if they're skimping on extras or what, but. It's an interesting trend that Disney's been going through.
Maybe they just got confused. They're like, well, if they're going to pay this much money for the Blu-ray, might as well just put the regular thing in there. Who cares? Screw it. We're Disney. Good movie. Go to Pleasure Island. Rachel Getting Married, the Jonathan Demme film starring Anne Hathaway and Deborah Winger.
Great movie.
I want to see that. Transporter 3 in 1- and 2-disc special edition.
Even better movie.
I will have watched this by the next show.
The trilogy is now complete. South Park, season 12. Yay.
Too bad Josh isn't here, too.
Too bad. That was a good season, too. One of our favorites, Let the Right One In.
Yay.
Woo.
Yippee.
This week is awesome. The Boy in Striped Pajamas. Good film. The Vera Farmiga and David Thewlis. Excellent film.
Wait. Sorry, just a note. Ben Lyon said that it's a film that will stay with you for the rest of your life, yet he didn't put it on his top 10 list.
Oh, dang. And there it is.
Is that on the back of the DVD? It'll stay with you for the rest of your life?
I wouldn't be surprised if it is.
Man. Benny. Howard the Duck, one of the most infamous box office flops of all time. Finally, years later, released on DVD. This is with Leah Thompson, Tim Robbins, and Jeffrey Jones.
This is like 20 years old, isn't it? It
came out in 86, so over 20 years old, yeah.
Dang.
Man. Duck boobs.
It's got some good special features on it too, so this is going to be a good buy unless you're like me and you've seen this movie so many times, like why do I want to buy the DVD?
I have to see it.
God, I'm tempted. Role Models, Sean William Scott and Paul Rudd, very funny movie. Mike Lee is Happy Go Lucky. Marty really loved this movie. I need to see this.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Cool.
Wholeheartedly recommend it.
I heard the lead actress's performance too is really great in the
yeah, she gave the best performance of the year 2008 in my opinion, man. But
better
the
than
Academy didn't seem to think so.
Better than Kate Winslet in The Reader?
Well, she didn't show her boobs as much, that's true.
Oh, dang.
That's right. Holocaust movie plus boobs equals Oscar. Batman Anthology on Blu-ray and DVD. This is the first 4 Batman films.
And I've just verified it's on Blu-ray, Ethan, so you can be happy.
Woo.
You can see Arnie as Mr. Freeze in its Blu-ray glory.
So beautiful.
those close-ups of the nipples and the butt shots.
And the neon wet dream, and yeah.
And Alicia Silverstone as Batgirl.
Yeah.
All right.
Alfred, yeah.
The first two are good. Cadillac Records, Most Def, Jeffrey Wright, and Beyonce Knowles. In theaters for about 5 minutes. This is supposed to be a big Oscar contender, though I've heard good things about it, especially Most Def as Chuck Berry. What a great casting choice that is. One of my favorites of last year, Synecdoche, New York. Paul.
Yeah, another good movie.
Yeah, great film. Philip Seymour Hoffman, Diane Wiest, Emily Watson, Samantha Morton, and Tom Noonan. Great cast, great movie. Then you got the original Witch Mountain movies, Escape to Witch Mountain and Return to Witch Mountain in special edition. And Return to Witch Mountain, that's the one with Christopher Lee and Bette Davis as the bad guys.
You don't get much creepier than that.
It's fun.
Especially in a Disney movie.
Yeah. Yeah, this is back when Bette Davis, she was doing a lot of those Disney movies like The Watcher in the Woods and
yeah.
Yeah, excellent. And then finally, no, I got two more. Primal Fear, great film. Best thing Richard Gere ever did. Richard Gere, Laura Linney, and the Academy Award nominated Edward Norton in his breakout debut role. Fantastic movie, great film.
Yes.
The Miracle Worker. Is this with Patty Duke? Why did you even put
and
this
Melissa
on here?
Gilbert, because...
Melissa Gilbert.
Because you thought it was cool when you were a kid, and then you watched it a little late, and you're like, why did I ever watch this?
Miracle Worker is like The Crucible. It's always awesome on stage to see, but whenever it's done as a movie, it always comes across as like a TV movie. And finally, Woody Woodpecker favorites.
I love me some Woody Woodpecker.
Oh, Woody Woodpecker's awesome.
That was like
the most cracked out comic book character.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a cartoon character on speed.
Seriously.
Wait, can anyone do the thing properly, or am I the best one?
Was that it?
That's probably as good as it gets for today.
Wow. Okay, then.
Yes. Sorry. We should have practiced beforehand.
It's all good. Okay. So let's go ahead and hit some news. I've got like nothing this week.
Likewise. It is all Ethan today.
Well, we do have the Watchmen trailer. I mean, the Harry Potter trailer that showed in front of Watchmen on IMAX.
And Star Trek and T4.
Yeah. All I got was Harry Potter.
That's all you got?
That's all I got.
When I saw Watchmen at a press screening, all we had was observe and report.
That's an interesting choice.
Isn't that strange? Yeah.
Huh. So what did you guys think of the trailer?
For Observe and Report?
For Harry Potter. Did you see that one?
I haven't seen that one yet, no.
That's good?
Yeah. I'm always like, yeah, sure, I'm up for seeing it. But after that trailer, I was like, I've got to see this movie now. It's a really well-cut trailer. And then there's Star Trek, which I don't know. You've seen this one, right, Ethan?
Yeah, I saw it in front of Watchmen.
Cool.
It doesn't add a whole lot new to what we've seen already.
Yeah, but I thought it was pretty epic looking. I thought it was a pretty well done trailer. The music was really awesome.
Yeah. At this point, I don't want to see any more spoilers. I don't want to see any more new footage. I'm happy. I'll just watch this trailer over and over again until May.
Yeah, I was talking to my friend before, who's also a big Star Trek fan. Well, I can't. Trekkie, Trekker? I'm not sure. But
I think Trekkie is acceptable.
You're saying how like action-oriented it looks. I'm saying, well, you know, of course they're going to advertise the action. They're not going to, like, you can't imagine them advertising the possible, like, cerebral elements of the movie in the trailer. They got to show some crap blowing up to get the, you know, the high school jocks to see it, you know?
Right.
There you go.
So. No, exactly. I saw Steve Soderbergh Che last night. I forgot to mention that. And the trailer for the movie makes it look like an all-in-all explosion action fest. They don't show, like, Benicio del Toro and Cass talking in Spanish for 4.5 hours. Of course, that's not how you, you know, publicize a movie. Imagine that, so.
Yeah, how was it? Did you like it?
I did. I really liked it. But it did not need to be 4.5 hours long with an intermission. But you know what? They made it really cool for us, though, because we got a program for the film walking in. I mean, it was really old school. It didn't have any trailers, any commercials, any opening credits. The movie just started, and then it just ended. No previews, no credits at all. Yeah. So
probably won't come to Winnipeg.
I'm amazed we even got it, but yeah, it's a good film.
Very cool.
Anyway,
right on. And then what was the other one? T4?
Dun, yeah. Dun, 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 dun.
Terminator Salvation. Yeah, I haven't seen this one yet.
I think it looks wicked cool. A lot of flying crap and speedy crap and
nice
guys
nails.
Guys with like half their face robot, half their face normal.
I take it back. I did see that. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it looks interesting. Yeah. It looks like there might be more to it than just crap blowing up.
Yeah. And apparently there's a big twist, you know, a big cliffhanger at the end. And apparently you know what it is and it's awful, but hopefully
I do.
Yeah, you and Josh were snickering about it like months ago. Remember?
Actually, wait, I think Big G said he changed that.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
Okay. I hope he did.
Now it's Arnold.
I don't know what it is.
Now it's Arnold saying, I'm your father. I have no idea why I had to say that, but. Yeah, it looks promising, and I'm saying that about a McG movie, which is, you know, go back about 4 or 5 months, and I would shoot myself for saying this. So.
We were not saying that about Weir Marshall. We're still not saying that about Weir Marshall.
Well, Charlie's Angels Full Throttle had a lot of throttle.
Okay, what else? What other news have you got? Let's go ahead and move away from the world of McG.
No, let's talk about Charlie's Angels now.
Yeah.
I like the part with Bernie Mac where he, like, said he was a leprechaun.
I don't even remember that. It's been a while since I've seen that one.
Yeah, same here. And oh,
I saw once the day it opened. That's it. I knew
we have it downstairs.
Back. Oh.
I'll just say it wasn't my
Maybe
choice.
We should talk about the Wolverine trailer.
Okay,
maybe
let's
do
that.
Yeah, good trailer.
It is.
Wait, but you could tell what they're doing to Deadpool, right?
Okay, here's the thing. I don't think it's Deadpool.
Really? Well, they did in the toy thing. It said Deadpool on it.
I
and
know.
Had the same design. And...
I know. I was at Walmart the day they came out with all the figures. I rifled through all of them, and I was not able to find that figure.
So you think it's like a fake?
I don't know. I'm not going to say that, but I don't... I think they call him like Weapon 11 or something like that, which is not Deadpool.
What are you geeks talking about? I'm
there's
lost.
A Deadpool figure that came out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look anything like Deadpool. It has two claws. It's apparently the theory is that it's some kind of mutant hybrid that they're making.
In the movie.
Yeah. They capture all these mutants and put all their powers into one guy and then.
And in the trailer, you can see shots of like Hugh Jackman fighting it or something.
Yeah. I'm hoping that they just mislabeled that Deadpool figure. Because the figure I got is the Deadpool in the original costume. And it's quite cool, by the way.
Isn't this the character Ryan Reynolds is playing? Or
yes.
No? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have his mouth sewn shut.
Okay.
Which I could see as a joke, because everyone got sick of listening to him. But I don't know. I'm hoping it's not.
Intriguing. Sorry, I'm still in the camp that this movie will be absolutely awful.
Oh, I'm sure it will too, but I've still got to go opening weekend.
Now, why are you in that camp?
Because there's all these like set reports about how Tom Rothman like took the movie away from the director and made him like he like repainted the sets to make them more like kid friendly. And now they're doing these like last minute reshoots, and it's just
Is this rumor or is this fact?
Apparently, from trusted sources said this, and considering Fox's streak of movies, I'm pretty sure that's the truth.
That's sad.
I'm still kind of hopeful that it won't completely blow, but. I'm prepared to be destroyed as well.
Well, what do we think is going to be better, this movie or Fast and the Furious 4?
Ew.
It's like saying which one's the better crap sandwich.
I think if you like took the opening weekend audience for Fast and the Furious 4 and like executed them on spot, the national IQ would go up by like 20 points.
Dang.
Wow.
That's
It's going to be a sad weekend.
Oh, is that what's opening up against?
No. But it's around the same time. They're both pre-summer movies.
Gotcha. Yikes. What else is it we got, Ethan?
Do you guys see the new 500 Days of Summer trailer?
No.
I've seen the original. Is the new trailer that different?
It has some of the same voiceover, but it's much longer and kind of gives a better look at the story, so to speak, and the interactions between the two. Characters.
Okay. I was sold on this movie after the first trailer. Do you think the second trailer did more justice?
Yeah, especially, I've got to say, this movie looks like it was exclusively made for me, to be honest.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because it's like just the beginning when he's like listening to the Smiths, and then Zooey Deschanel's like, oh, I love the Smiths too, and she starts singing some of them, and then the Joseph Gordon-Levitt's like, holy shit, and yeah.
See, that's also a sign of a very good trailer. When you feel like it was made just for you, that means there's been a lot of love and care put into a trailer.
Who's releasing this one?
Fox Searchlight.
Also Fox.
So it could be like an Oscar movie, almost, maybe. It
could be. You never know.
Fair enough. Got anything else?
Last
I feel like
trailer,
I'm really dropping the ball this
week.
Did
you guys see the Public Enemies trailer?
No. How does that look?
I think the movie will be good, but it's a really bad trailer, in my opinion.
How come?
It's kind of the music choice is bad. It's just kind of awkwardly put together. Like, Christian Bale is hardly in it, and he's like supposed to be like a major role. And I don't know. It's just kind of an awkwardly put together trailer, in my opinion.
Now, I heard a lot of people said the use of DV was pretty distracting, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually. Yeah, because it's being filmed like Collateral in Miami Vice. And it's kind of interesting seeing a period piece look like this. But in some ways, I'm interested in that because it's like, when you film, like, obviously all period piece movies, you kind of, there's this sheen to them of, it's a time of the past. But when you have this, it's kind of like you're making it into more of a reality almost, which is interesting. So I'm interested to see what it's like.
And I'm wondering if we're overplaying the Johnny Depp versus Christian Bale angle, because if you've seen the poster, it's Johnny Depp in Public Enemies and then starring Christian Bale. So I wonder if it's going to be like Al Pacino and De Niro in Heat.
Well, maybe after Kick You Off the Effing Set, they didn't want to advertise him anymore.
Poor Christian Bale.
And there you go.
I still want to get past that, so we're not like, that's not like the first thing we're thinking of when we think Christian Bale.
Well, like in the Terminator trailer, I thought they would have said his name at one point. They didn't even do that, so I wonder if that had,
I never said
Christian Bale is battling robots, you know?
They didn't even say the title, though, did they? Because it was just a bunch of title cards, right?
No, I think at the end it was like on May 21st.
Oh, well, that's the important part. We got to know the date, you know?
Yeah. No, actually, wasn't it at the end? It was like it formed the poster of like the robot with all the stuff blowing up.
And where the city morphs into the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope it's great. I want it to be cool to like Christian Bale again. You know, I went a whole year of hoping Valkyrie would change people's minds about Tom Cruise, and that didn't happen. So I'm really hoping that this summer will, like, you know, people will be like, "Oh, Christian Bale's brilliant. We forgot about that. Forget that he's got a pouty mouth." And
I still think it's cool to like Christian Bale.
Thank you. Good.
Yeah, he's still one of my favorite actors.
Likewise.
Cool. All right.
We must spread the word.
All right. Is that it, sir?
No, I've got like lots of news here.
Okay, well, run through it, sir. Let's do it.
Okay, Alexander Payne is finally doing a new movie.
Excellent.
It's called Downsizing, and it's about, I can't remember if it's dwarves or midgets, but it's going to star
Little
Paul
people,
Giamatti,
perhaps?
Reese Witherspoon, and Sacha Baron Cohen.
Excellent cast.
Okay.
So
sounds like a pretty funny plot.
Okay, so it's about little people.
Well, it's about, I think that it's like something like this. It's that Reese Witherspoon and Paul Giamatti are a couple, and to, I don't know if it's to get lower taxes or something like that, they like legally qualify themselves as like dwarves, I think. But then Reese Witherspoon backs out at the last minute, and it's just Giamatti alone. Apparently, Sacha Baron Cohen will be playing a midget or dwarf. I'm not sure which. So I wonder if he's going to be doing like an Eddie Murphy kind of thing with that, or...
Sounds like a Farrelly Brothers comedy. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, they did it in Lord of the Rings.
They did.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just made that correlation, though.
Maybe you can have hairy feet also.
Okay. Moving on, sir.
Okay. Have you guys heard about Kevin Smith's new movie?
No. What's he doing?
I like the title.
It's a cop comedy with Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan called A Couple of Dicks or Cops.
They're no, kinda... apparently they aren't going to cops.
I think it was gonna be called, it was first it was gonna be A Couple of Dicks, and they changed it to A Couple of Cops. Then I think I heard something they might change it back again, so I don't know.
Yeah.
What's interesting here is that it's a studio movie. It's Warner Brothers, so it's like breaking away from the Weinsteins.
Yeah.
And it's not a script written by him.
I'm hoping this does well because I want to see Smith grow as a filmmaker.
Me too.
I was talking with some people over at Geek Radio Daily about this, and I think the reason why I didn't like Zach and Murray very much is because we all know he can do this in his sleep.
Yeah.
And because he got kind of smacked down with what happened with Jersey Girl, it's almost like he's scared to go back he's very insecure. I mean, when you get beat down that bad.
Right.
I want to see him get back up and really become the great filmmaker I think he can be.
I agree.
Well, I know that Bruce Willis really wanted to work with him after Die Hard, wanted to make a movie together, so they're doing it.
Cool.
Well, hopefully this will be a step in the right direction, though, you know, if they do keep the title A Couple of Dicks, you know it's going to get released in Walmart as a couple.
Or they'll change it to A Couple of Cops.
That's right.
Or they'll just translate it to Swahili and release it that way. I don't know.
That would be interesting.
No, yeah. Again, no idea where that came from. But yeah, I'm hoping that it's good. Sir.
Yeah, likewise.
Did you guys see that thing on Slash Film about the new Joshua Jackson movie, 1 Week, that's using quotes from YouTube to promote it?
Yeah, like you have all these like quotes from people, you know, it's a great movie, blah, blah, blah. And what did the YouTube quotes say?
Well, it's funny. It's like there's some where it's like, this is a fabulous movie, like from Joe Blow Boba Fett 92 or something. Then there's ones that's just like, it looks good.
And at the bottom, it has a star next to it. And at the bottom of the ad, it says, you know, quotes pulled from YouTube.
So.
Because no one was going to catch on to that at all.
But what does Ben Lyons think? That is what I want to know.
I don't. I'm sure he loves, it's called 1 Week, so he loves weeks, but he didn't like 1 Week. I don't know.
So Josh Jackson, anybody else we know in it?
No, it's actually funny. This movie's actually being advertised a lot in Winnipeg, though. Like, I've seen the poster in a bunch of places.
And, like, no one else is in it?
Pardon me?
Like, no one else, no other big names are in this?
No, he's the only name in it.
Was it filmed in Winnipeg?
No, I don't think so, at least. But
Does Jackson have a following over there? Or?
No, which is weird. He should.
I love that. It was like it wasn't just no. It was like, what are you talking about? No.
You should, though. He's Canadian.
I'm just intrigued that, that the people of Winnipeg are familiar with this movie, but no one else knows about this film. It's just interesting. I was wondering if, you guys had a film festival where you watch, the Skulls and, Cruel Intentions.
It's like Hasselhoff in Germany.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Oh, he's huge in Winnipeg,
Well, Phantom of the Paradise has a big following here for some reason.
Well, that is awesome. That is so cool.
Okay.
I can appreciate that. Now I want to go to Winnipeg just to be like, yeah, man, Phantom of the Paradise. Woo! Are you a fan of that, Ethan? I love the Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, my dad was a fan of it when he was a kid, so he made me I ordered it off of Zip, which is the Canadian Netflix, and we sat down and watched it together, and we had a bunch of fun.
That's a great movie. It's a shame De Palma takes himself so seriously; he can't do a film like that anymore. Too bad.
All right, what else you got, sir?
Okay, last one. Did you guys see his new Prince of Persia pics of Jake Gyllenhaal in character?
I did, and you said you had something very specific to say about them.
Yeah, I don't think I can take this movie seriously at all.
Really?
And that's the problem. I mean, you think of Jake Gyllenhaal, and you think of Prince of Persia, and the two just don't really mesh that well.
Yeah, and I think he's a great actor. It's just there's something, just the combination of the hair and the shirtless look and the look on his face and the fact that he's 0% Persian, just kind of.
There is that. Oh, I saw some People magazine shots of him months and months ago, and he looks freaking ripped, he's been doing 1,000 push-ups a day. I don't know. I thought, but as an action hero, sure.
Now, granted, who would have bought Oscar Schindler as an action hero?
This is true.
That's true.
Then again, that's probably giving too much credit, but still, hey.
Liam Neeson is such a brilliant actor, too. He, he's one of these guys who could almost make you believe anything.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right. And he was Darkman.
Yes, he was.
He was indeed.
I love that film.
Yes. Well, that's quite a bit of news that we had. So we're going to take a quick break, a couple minutes or so, and then we'll be right back to talk some Watchmen.
I should be right here, right?
In the Seventh Son podcast novel trilogy, author J.C. Hutchins sent you underground to a secret human cloning factory. You clawed your way to the surface. You survived. Prepare to head into hell again. Welcome to Brinkville Psychiatric Hospital, the setting for Hutchins' next novel, the supernatural thriller, Personal Effects, Dark Art. It's a rotten place with a bloody history. 9 stories of howling madness. Built inside an abandoned brownstone quarry. Locals call it the Brink. And now, J.C. Hutchins and creator Jordan Weissman are opening the doors of their bloody creation before the book's June bookstore debut. But you're not getting a guided tour of the Brink. You're being committed. Become a part of publishing history by admitting yourself to the Brink and becoming a patient of art therapist Zach Taylor. Inject yourself into the personal effects universe. Create a patient profile. Receive your admittance papers. Contribute artwork. And earn the insanely cool privilege to appear on Brinkvale Psychiatric's official website. Find your first art assignment now at jchutchins.net/thebrink. Fill out your patient paperwork, submit your art, and come back for more assignments. Get creative. Get crazy. Get committed. Go to jchutchins.net/thebrink for more information, or visit jchutchins.net/personal effects to learn more about the book, coming this June.
Yeah, so that's kind of creepy.
Very cool.
Yes. Here's the cool thing. Again, it's called Personal Effect. It's written by J.C. Hutchins. 9 short stories, all kinds of psychiatric horror stuff. But they're kind of doing the alternate reality gaming thing in a way. There's a Batman comic that came out a while ago where it was like a solve the mystery. So it gave you clues on different pages. Like you could pull out the invitation to the party. And this is actually kind of like that in that you go to separate websites to get clues to try to solve the mystery too.
It's not like a multiple adventure book?
No, it's not like choose your own adventure or anything, but it's a very interesting experiment in how interactive it can become. So I'm hoping it'll be cool. So the stuff I've read, it looks really good. And actually, I think we're going to try to get JC on the show at some point.
Nice.
Here too. So
I love it whenever we do commercials on the show, it's always for stuff that we believe in. We're never like, you're never going to hear like, hi, I'm Suzanne Summers and I believe in the Thigh Master. You know, we're never going to, we're never going to do crap like that. I love that. It's always stuff that we're like, yes, this is great.
I can't wait for the next Uwe Boll film.
And I'm Uwe Boll. You're going to love my new film.
Yeah. We're here interviewing Ben Lyons.
Okay, the day that happens is the day I shut the site down. I'm just saying.
I'd talk to him,
interesting.
Wouldn't that be interesting? Yeah.
See how many times you can get him to put his foot in his mouth?
What's it like to sell your soul to the devil?
What's it like to have a Nine Inch Nails song written about you?
Wow.
Oh, Star Effers Incorporated?
Yes. Yes, that'd be the one.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I went back for that joke, but it had to. All right, this week we're talking Watchmen.
Dun, dun.
Oh, we're going to get into spoilers with this, right?
We have to.
Yeah. I think we do too. I'll put a note in the show notes to say, hey, if you don't want to listen to the spoilers, come back at this time. And then we'll probably give off a fake spoiler right after that and then talk about it.
Ah,
then
very
good. For the show from there, yes. But so if you don't want to listen to spoiler-drenched discussion of Watchmen, skip ahead to that time point now.
Let's start with the ending then. Might as well. Let's get that out of the way. I didn't like how they changed the ending.
No, I don't either.
For me, like they took out all the depth, and it became just a typical good guy, bad guy slugfest, you know?
Go ahead, Ethan.
I have to really disagree. I think it worked well. There's that same moral question I found from the graphic novel, and there's, I think, a scene I really liked towards the end they added in was when after Manhattan kills Rorschach, and Dan, he goes and he kind of starts wailing on Adrian, but he just lets him do it. And I thought that was such a sad scene. It kind of summed up the way Dan pretty clearly hates Adrian for everything he's done, but he has to live with his decisions for the betterment of the planet, basically.
Mm.
I that portion of it I bought into. It was the actual disaster they chose. And I'm not about to say that they had to do the squid or nothing.
I don't think the squid would have worked at all.
I can agree with that wholeheartedly. And the more I thought about it, the more I went and looked through the graphic novel afterwards. It wasn't so much that there was this giant squid in the middle of New York. It's all the carnage that you saw that you didn't get with the film.
Yeah, this actually brings me to one of my big problems with the movie is the violence. I think that was definitely the one point where they should have gone as gory as they did. But otherwise, like throughout the movie, it's kind of like a Saw movie almost.
Yes, it is.
It is. I think they could have cut back on some of the gore in other areas in order to be able to do that payoff. And I've actually talked with my wife about this. She didn't see it, but I told her the gist of how it ends and stuff. And it came up, the discussion came up, you know, yes, it's very sterilized. It looks like something off the set of The Day After Tomorrow. But with 9/11 happening, do you really need the gore to have the same payoff today that you would have had 10 years ago?
That's a good question.
I was just thinking also another thing from the graphic novel, though, is that scene where basically everyone dies has so much impact because, like, we see from the graphic novel the kid, you know, the comic book and the psychiatrist as these developed characters.
You build a little bit of a relationship with them.
Yeah, and like in the graphic novel when the kid and the newsstand guy, like, embrace, that's a very, like, emotional moment. But in the movie, it's kind of just like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes to my biggest qualm is how much that they had to cut. Now, here's the thing. I understand why they couldn't go the gory route for the end. They wanted to keep an R rating, and I could see it pushing the R rating if they'd kept everything else. You have to do certain things to keep a movie marketable so that you don't scare off an audience and tell everyone, don't bother seeing this movie.
Blue schlong.
Okay, it is possible to have too much blue glowing penis. I've discovered that. It was when you had four of them on the screen at the same time. I was like, okay, come on, guys. Can you not do a waist-up shot once in a while? So, okay, so that was the ending. I don't know
I want to go with you guys are talking about with the violence. I completely agree. I mean, for me, a very telling moment of just that this movie is too violent, of all things. It's too violent. The scene in the graphic novel, again, do the obvious comparison, where Rorschach murders the child murderer. I mean, he burns him to death. I thought that was powerful and disturbing enough in the graphic novel. Here, he hatches him in the face till he's like mashed potatoes. We didn't need that. The whole movie, well, like, it just, it's, I thought it was so overdone at times.
Yeah, well, I think if they just kept him like putting, like cleaving him in the head once, it would have been perfect. But
exactly.
This kind of brings my point, though. Even though I love this movie, my problem with the violence is that I think in the graphic novel, Alan Moore is very condemning of violence. He still shows it, but only in the proper context. But the fact that Snyder himself goes so overboard with it kind of is very hypocritical, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I will agree. I agree with that. Honestly, I think the part where he finds a child molester killer is probably just about the most powerful scene in the movie for me. Just because it really gets at the core of who Rorschach is. And I mean, I agree. You could have had one cleave to the head. You didn't even have to show him cleaving. You could show the downward motion and you're going to get the same effect because you've had enough blood and gore. You know how rough this is. I will say there's one scene where there's a perfect amount of violence, and that was during the attempted rape. Because it reflected pretty much exactly what was in the comic, and it showed just how ugly of a person the comedian was.
I think it was actually more graphic in the graphic
exactly.
novel.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised that they didn't go for more, considering what was in this movie.
Yeah, seriously.
So, where do you want to go next with this? It's really hard to tackle.
Music.
Yes, let's talk about the music. Oh, talk about someone getting murdered to the tune of Nat King Cole's Unforgettable. I really did not like that.
I thought that was so well done, actually.
I kind of liked it, too.
Why? Why did you guys like it? Why?
I don't know. It's such an odd choice.
The contrast was really well done, I thought. And it was kind of just, at least, it's kind of hard to say why you liked it. Just sometimes it's just cool or it's not cool.
I think the fact that it's such a low-key song and a very, you know, sweet song juxtaposed with the violence of what you had in that scene, for some reason it clicked with me, and I don't know why.
So if they also used like Hannah Montana's "The Best of Both Worlds," you would have liked that as well.
I actually would have laughed. And I would have laughed. So okay. Again, I can't put my finger on it.
Okay,
I can say that a lot of the music was put in really bad places, though.
How about 99 Luft Balloons?
I kind of like that actually.
It's period correct.
I know. Yeah, it's the one time.
Well, maybe just because I like the song overall, though. So.
Well, the song that I love, and I've always imagined every time I've read Watchmen, and they only use it instrumentally at one point, is "Everybody Wants to Rule the World."
Yeah, I noticed that in his when he was talking to the corporate people.
I noticed that was pretty cool. Freaking love that song. I thought, perfect. It's in a Watchmen movie, but it was only in that one little scene. But.
Well, the biggie fries here is Hallelujah.
Oh, by Leonard Cohen, yeah.
I actually love that because I think that whole scene was played for laughs, to be honest.
I hope so because at least half my theater was dying laughing.
Yeah. Well, of course, I think when there's the fire ejaculation symbolism, like
that was so
I think
stupid.
That's what tells you that it's played for laughs, I think.
Another question. Speaking of playing for laughs, was Dr. Manhattan fondling a bra in the graphic novel?
Yes.
He was? Okay, I couldn't remember if it was in there or not, but yeah that was another moment.
It's a spot where she's talking about, I don't know if he knows what to do with anything, and it, just in the comics, it has him holding the bra.
Okay, I couldn't remember if it was in the graphic novel, because I saw it in the movie, like, man, because that also got a big laugh, and it wasn't a nice laugh.
Yes, so. And don't worry, folks, we do have nice things to say, too, so we're just getting the ugly out of the way first.
Too much slow-mo. Too much frickin' slow-mo.
Good God.
Yeah,
Way too much slow-mo.
Kind of bring back the violence thing, though, is when they're in the alley fight with the Knot Tops, and there's the... What's the correct term for this? The protruding bone? Or the
Yes, sure.
The compound fracture.
That was a little too much slow-mo. Yeah.
Well, and then we have the prison fight that was... I mean, I saw this on Ain't It Cool before I read anyone's comments. I'm like, this is out of Old Boy.
Mm.
And it totally is. Here's the difference, though. And again, we'll get into this in a minute, too. In the comic, the whole point of the comic was outside of Dr. Manhattan and possibly Ozymandias, everyone else was a normal human being.
Right.
After, you know, on both of those fights with Night Owl and the Silk Spectre, they should have been, at least been breathing hard or have some bruises or something.
It was all Matrixy stuff. Yeah.
Well, actually, the biggest example that, even though Ozymandias is established as being like the most like athletic person in the world too, is when. You know, when they first come to his fortress and Karnak and Rorschach jumps at him and then Ozzy does that like 20-foot jump in the air.
Yeah.
And then there's a 30-foot drop that Rorschach does at another point. And I don't know. We'll get to the whole comic book comparison in a second.
I can't believe I'm being so negative because I did love this movie.
Well, I think, you know, it's a problematic movie, even though there are great things in it. We'll get to that again. But let's talk about the performances for a second. I thought the performances were uneven. I hated Matthew Good as Ozymandias. I thought he looked very bored, frankly.
Go ahead.
No, Dave, you go first.
I got the distinct feeling through half of the stuff that Ozymandias said, he had no idea what he was saying. Like, he didn't, like, comprehend the words that he was saying, which is not a good sign for the smartest man on the planet.
And this is a great actor, too, and I really felt either that was just miscasting or he, frankly, had his nose up at the material, but yeah, I just...
Okay, everyone shut up, it's time for my opinion. I was really expecting him to be really bad because I thought, like, just looking at pictures of him and seeing the trailer, I thought he was really miscast. But I think he did a decent job of conveying Ozymandias's arrogance, and I thought he actually brought this real kind of little sense of sadness to the role. I felt like I felt the scene with the comedian, for example, the flashback scene. I felt he played that very well. He really showed how sad he was by the world deteriorating and. But yeah, I agree. He did look way too young, in my opinion.
I thought he conveyed sadness that he was cast in the movie.
Oh, dude. Here's the thing. That's not the weakest performance of the movie.
Well, that's true. Although, gotta
We're
say...
on Mars?
Go ahead, Dave.
Miss Ackerman.
Yeah, she's cute though, but yeah, no, not a great performance.
Well, you have moments that are out of a Saturday, an after-school special... It's like, you shouldn't take drugs. Like, she had that kind of acting.
Yeah.
Just not good.
She reminded me of Drew Barrymore playing the part.
Before I get into that, sorry, did you guys see that Saturday Morning Watchmen thing?
Yes. They made a Saturday morning cartoon intro of The Watchmen.
Oh, wow.
Let alone the fact that they're never referred to as The Watchmen ever in the comic, but that's beside the point.
Yeah. Well, okay, back to Miss Ackerman here. I'd read all these reviews saying how bad she was, and at first I was like, she's not that bad. But I always find this with some really bad actors. It's where there comes this point when you're watching them when you realize they deliver every single line exactly the same.
There's only, we'll just say, one scene where she was really convincing. on Archie.
Yeah, that scene.
That'd be the one.
I don't think it was quite that bad, but... I mean, then again, considering the depth that these performances, could have had versus what the actors had, I thought in some respects they certainly went above and beyond. Speaking of which, let's talk about Rorschach
Knight
and Patrick Wilson and certainly and Billy Crudup. I thought they were terrific, those three.
Yeah, and Jeffrey Dean Morgan as well.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan, great. Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. I Rorschach, that was Rorschach on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as I was concerned.
Yeah,
especially his final moment in the movie was so awesome.
Yeah, when he was on the screen, I was my attention was definitely on the movie.
That's how I was with Dr. Manhattan. Whenever it was Dr. Manhattan, the movie pretty much had me.
Oh, why was that? Because of one certain?
No,
you guys need to get over your penis problem. I have no problem with a penis. I own one. I have no problem with it. It's not blue and three stories tall, but you know what?
You bought it at Kmart.
Oh,
well, it was on sale. Come on.
I
didn't mind that. I thought he was mesmerizing. I thought he was fantastic.
Yeah,
and
he was terrific.
Those scenes, honestly, just really gripped me. And frankly, let me just jump to my favorite part of the movie, the origin of Dr. Manhattan. I thought that scene was so powerful. That's my favorite part of the whole movie.
Pardon?
Philip Glass music?
Yeah, it was perfect. That whole scene, just loved it.
I have to say my favorite part was when he wasn't digitized, when he wasn't CG'd.
Oh, the prior to him changing?
Yeah. I thought it really brought out the performance that he had.
It was a good contrast, yeah.
I think so. Unfortunately, I think the CG detracted from his performance.
Because of the penis?
Really? No, not at all. Not at all. I think it was just poor CGI.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know that his tux came out of Toy Story, because that's what the clothes looked like.
You're right. There are times where it was too digitized.
And there were spots. I mean, I really think that his performance outplayed how they portrayed him on the screen.
Hmm.
There were parts where the mouth movements just didn't match up.
Hmm.
Like his facial expressions and stuff didn't match up with what he was saying. I know Manhattan's mostly plays stuff close to the vest because he's so detached from humanity.
Yeah.
But still, I thought it detracted from his performance overall.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't think it was fair to him. What were you saying, Nathan?
I was going to say, actually, when it's like first scene of the movie, I thought the CGI looked pretty poor, but I don't know, maybe I just got used to it, but I thought by the end, at least, I was pretty convinced.
Well, and I'll say that the CGI should win best digital effects forever compared to the makeup.
The beak?
Specifically Nixon and old Silk Spectre 1. Both of those were really bad makeup jobs.
Yeah.
to the point where it detracted. I'm cool with them having their nuclear meeting in the war room from Dr. Strangelove, because it kind of, you know, knowing where Moore comes from, it makes sense. But when the makeup is just that much of a caricature on both fronts, it pulled me out right from the beginning.
Well, the Nixon stuff was a mistake. I mean, you know, on one hand, I understand and I appreciate that they're trying to maintain the political depth and the political material of it. But, and, you know, for that matter, I also like that they try to maintain, you know, the whole 80s allure. But I felt that, yeah, just.
Well, no, you can do Nixon. You just need to do a more subdued makeup job. You can't make it a caricature in makeup, because that nose was like three stories long.
It was like Steve Martin and Roxanne. It was.
And there was no need for it. I mean, it's drawing unnecessary attention. It's little things like that that if they'd done better, I bet you I would have thought much higher of the movie.
I didn't think those scenes worked in general, though, the Nixon stuff, honestly.
Well, I think the point was, in the book, you can establish all this fear of nuclear war through the people on the street, right?
Yeah.
Well, you had to cut that out in the movie, and the only way you could really convey that nuclear war feel was through having, you know, the most powerful man in the world, or sorry, in the country, talk about that. You know?
And I think part of the problem is that Nixon is the president of the world in Futurama, so that kind of comes into play too. My fellow Earthicans, you know.
Yeah, never forget the great taste of Charleston Chew. Yeah.
So I mean, but here's the thing: if they hadn't gone so overboard with the makeup, I wouldn't have made that correlation.
Hmm.
So that was a pretty serious problem. And Silk Spectre 1, I mean, I understand you're aging her like 40 years or whatever, but still, that was bad.
Okay, I'm going to seem like a complete idiot for saying this, but isn't Carla Gugino like Latino?
Italian.
Oh, really? Doesn't she have some kind of Spanish in her?
I thought she was Italian.
Does she have some like color in her?
Yeah,
oh, that sounds so racist. Cut that out.
No. I know what you mean. It's like Jennifer Lopez or something like that. You know, she has a tan. I understand what you're saying.
Okay, I was like so worried I came off as like racist there, but I was.
So we have the American Coalition of Race on the line. No, you're fine.
Anything that they did, she looked just like the character, especially in the flashback stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, you know, yeah. I know exactly what you're saying. Silk Spectre is, you know, is all American girl, yeah, and so I think that's obviously what they want to convey with the performance and the wig, and I thought her performance got better as the movie progressed, because I thought initially she was kind of hamming it up for the makeup, but I thought her closing scenes were very good.
Yeah,
I suppose. I didn't think much one way or another at the end.
She was barely in the movie, which I thought was another problem, because this is a very key figure in the story.
It was. Well, speaking of key things, I mean, I appreciated the fact that during the opening credit montage, if you will, that they do a lot of great, you know, shout outs to different stuff, especially, you know, the guy getting caught in with his cape and getting shot and all that. But people who haven't read the book had no clue what was going on, so they were laughing at half the stuff because they're like, I don't know what's going on. It's funny.
Actually, the detail most liked in the opening credits was how they showed all the customers lining outside of Rorschach's mom. Yeah, all the waiting for her and young Rorschach. I thought that was like such a – like I didn't expect that to see that at all, but I thought it was such a cool little kind of funny touch.
Yeah. I mean, if you've read the comic, you kind of appreciate it. And if you haven't, you have no clue what's going on. There's no kind of – perspective given at all.
Well, speaking of that Bubastis, like if I hadn't read the comic, I would be like, what the is that big freaking cat doing?
Yeah, that Lynx got screwed, man. It's one of my favorite things about the graphic novel, and yeah, it was just a little walk on. Yep.
And so it comes down to the point of how do you judge this movie?
Well,
because I've heard people say, you know what, Zack Snyder did the best with what he could have, with what he had. And I don't know that I can use that as an excuse.
No, I don't buy that.
Well, I think I've been pretty fair to this movie. Like, I've been pretty equally negative and positive, but I have to get gushing here. But the first, like, hour or so of the movie, I was just going like, holy crap. This is the graphic novel, I thought.
I think in many ways, yes.
Like, I could not believe my eyes. Like, it really just was. And, like, even just the... I'm so like happy to include that moment in the graphic novel, you know, about the Rorschach when he's talking in his journal about Pagliacci the clown and stuff like that. And
Gush away, sir.
I was just so like, throughout the movie, I just felt so enchanted by it, like in awe of like just, it's this thing I've read so many times. It just keeps, I like just seeing so many things that I recognized on screen. It's like, I just, yeah, that probably, it did cloud my judgment of the movie a lot, probably, like, but I really, it just was impressive, I thought, and I think Snyder really did capture the essence the best he could, so.
Yeah. I, there were little moments that I loved. I loved the part where Dan goes to meet, have a beer with Hollis Mason. It's just a little intimate moment that really is a throwaway, but the fact that it's there and it was done so well, I really appreciated that. There's a lot about this movie I like. It's not a pile of suck by a long shot. But, you know, and like I said, Rorschach is amazing in it. I will be shocked if this doesn't win for art direction, win an Oscar, because they created the comic book pretty much. And I would even go as far as to say not, with the exception of Vietnam, it wasn't done to a fault. So, just my opinion. There were little stupid little throwaway lines. Well, good thing you were here, Dr. Manhattan, otherwise we would have lost this Vietnam War. I'm like, did the comedian really just say that? I just didn't buy the comedian saying something that goofy. With how much of a, I don't know, with how much of a hard ass, with how cynical he was, it just didn't fit with the character. So, although the part where he shot the pregnant lady was perfectly in character, and I'm really surprised that they didn't show him actually shooting her. You saw him pull the trigger and you saw the body fall, but you didn't actually see the impact. With how much blood and gore there was in this movie, I figured that'd be a scene where it would be there. Again, maybe it was the studio saying, we can't have people show, we can't show a pregnant lady getting shot. I don't know.
But they did show a dead dog. That was a step up for a studio.
They did.
They did.
Marley and me.
Oh, dang. But since you brought up the whole part with the kidnapped six-year-old, I really think that was the most powerful part of the film, because the funny thing is that Alan Moore is very much anti-Republican, I guess you can say, pretty fairly. Yet, Rorschach is the most hardcore neocon that you can ever find, and he ends up pretty much becoming the hero of the movie unintentionally, I think.
Yeah. Well, Go ahead, Ethan.
Well, I was kind of thinking if there's, in the graphic novel at least, there's that part in the chapter, I think after Ozzy's revealed as basically being behind everything. You know, he has the one that ends with "I did it 35 minutes ago." And in the supplemental material, they have an Ozymandias interview, and where he's just mentioning how all the characters, like, how right wing they are, like Rorschach and the comedian. And it's kind of funny seeing how he's referred to as kind of the most liberal person, but really, in a lot of ways, he did a very kind of right wing thing at the end. So it's very. The morals are very, it's a very much a gray area that I think they kept in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
It's just difficult to talk about. Because, and here I'll get into my main qualm with this. The reason why you're going to have people being much more critical on this film than you had people with the Spider-Man movies, with Batman, with the X-Men, with all this stuff, in every single one of those, you have 40 plus years worth of material to work off of. So even if you aren't doing a specific story, you can base stuff off of the comics and stay true to the characters and all blah, blah, blah. Watchmen, you have 12 issues, and it's very singularly a single story to be told. And I don't know that I didn't think it did justice to the book. That's what it comes down to.
Well, I agree with you, Dave.
I think it's the closest you're going to get in a film. I really do.
No, I want another guy to try this down the road. I do. I want somebody else to give this a shot. I think there is someone who could capture the depth. And actually, you know, but you know, before I completely write off this movie, I should say, you know, maybe we should give the 3-hour, 10-minute cut a look and see how much is in there. I mean, that's what they say. But I still don't think Zack Snyder was the right guy to do this. I think he captured the visual beauty of the graphic novel. I think the depth. I think this is a dumbed down version of a brilliant piece of material. And I think as the film as it stands, it's a great comic book movie. I just don't think it's not a classic like it could have been and should have been.
I think it's not impossible to get that depth into film because, again, I mean, you look at a previous director attached, Terry Gilliam. Brazil was one hell of a dense movie, but yet it got its point across.
The material is there. I would even, you know, the name I've been throwing out is Ridley Scott or Tim Burton. I'd like to see them give this material a shot.
Well, I think, well, part of it, though, is there, as even if, you know, you guys are making the movie after, there are perfectly done sequences in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if any director tried to do it again, a lot of it would just seem like a retreat.
But in putting in all the stuff that they took out, I just think it'd be a richer experience. For me, it's like the difference between the recent Count of Monte Cristo versus the book, The Count of Monte Cristo, which is brilliant and would take at least 6 hours to do right.
Well, actually, this just makes me think, well, when Paul Greengrass was attached, you know, it was going to be about the War on Terror. Do you think that would have worked?
Like, I think it would have worked in a very different way, if at all. If let's just pretend an alternate universe, we see this movie and it's a good movie. I think if that would have worked, it would have worked in a completely different way. But on the other hand, Snyder really took a huge risk in trying to make the material exactly what it was as opposed to what we want it to be. You know, some metaphor or parable about today, which is, you know, really... Watchmen can be construed as that way, but I love that he decided to go, let's go with the 80s thing. Let's go with the alternate Nixon universe.
I think he kind of understood that you had to do that because it really, the movie was very much a commentary on the Cold War, on cowboy diplomacy, on all these things that you kind of had to do in the 80s.
And stuff that's still relevant today.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is in many ways he was proven wrong about a lot of the things he had to say, so which made it even more fascinating. I'm like, I want to see this, if they're doing it that way. And I don't know, it just... Then again, being one of the opinion, I'm not sure this ever could be made into a good movie. I'm not that offended that it didn't, you know, wasn't spot on perfect because I've still got my comic.
Right. We'll always have the comic, thankfully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except Alex Billington. I had to.
I don't blame you. You know, just because. Never mind. Okay. I'll let it go because Barry's giving me an ugly.
Sorry, my headphone turned off. I don't hear what you guys are talking about. Staying out of this.
Let's move on. There are sequences that were, you know, like I said, the art direction is directly out of the comic. You could not have done better that way. Do you think that the weak performances were because of the actors or because of the acting or because of the directing or because of the script?
It could differ for everybody. I mean, you know, Billy Crudup says that he thinks Zack Snyder is one of the best directors he's ever worked with. I'm sure Patrick Wilson doesn't feel that way. Melanne Ackerman probably does, because let's face it, you know, the prior directors she's worked with are not, you know, of that huge caliber. So it could be that. It could be the material. Maybe they felt self-conscious and silly walking around in those costumes. It could be a lot of things. But I think the performances are uneven, though, no matter how we look at it.
I think Melanne Ackerman was just casted for one thing, to be honest.
For one scene in particular?
Yeah.
So in spite of all my problems with it, would I ever tell someone not to watch this movie? Depends on the person.
Actually, I saw it with my best friend, and he liked the movie at the end, but he was like, you know, I don't know if I'd recommend it.
You know, it takes a very particular kind of person to want to watch this movie cold without reading the comic or anything.
I was even talking to people before, like, I saw the movie who were talking about it, like... wanted to see it. I'm like, you know, I'm saying, keep in mind, this is a very mature movie, and it's gonna be very violent and very long and very thought provoking. And they're like, oh no, you know, shit's gonna blow up and stuff like that. So,
yeah, well, and I've said before, I've had to warn a few people: do not take your kids to see this, please. You know, if you are one who is offended by excessive amounts of violence, nudity, sex, what I like to tell people is, if you like a movie where the good guys can win, where humanity has looked like that they have a shred of decency, and that it ends with a happy ending, this is not your movie.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of harsh, but that's the way I would say it about the comic too.
It's a hard R, and it's a downer. It's dark material, and that's not even a criticism. That's the material. It's a downer. This is not a movie that the mainstream would, you know, presumably like. I'd be interested to even see if it makes over $100 million. I mean, it could drop like a stone over the next few weeks. With Race to Witch Mountain coming out this coming weekend, I mean, you know, stuff gets lighter and more fun over the weeks. You know, I don't know if people are going to want to keep going back to this alternate world and see these sad, depressed, neurotic, in some case psychotic people doing what they do.
Yeah. Ugh. Yikes. Well, that's my worry.
I keep interrupting you, and I feel like an ass.
No, just, hey, jump in there. Jump in. You know it.
You know, I just have to say, though, I think as much as we have our qualms, we have to appreciate the fact that Zack Snyder made a movie that mainstream audiences will hate.
This is true. Because I don't want to just bash on Zack Snyder the whole way through, one thing I appreciated was that what violence there was didn't come across as hyper-realistic, overtly CGI gore. It maintained a fairly gritty feel to it, especially compared to 300.
Although some of the slow-mo reminded me a lot of 300.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm not going to say, you know, that's everyone jokes about that being his signature, and turns out, hey, guess what it was? Mm. but there were things he did right. And I'm a firm believer, you know, I'm not writing off Zack Snyder by a long shot. Now, am I going to go see something he says, does again no matter what? No, but... You know, this wasn't like an abject failure, I don't think.
No, no. I mean, yeah, it's exactly what a lot of the critics are saying. It's not a triumph. It's not a failure. It's there is greatness in it. And it's the most ambitious film out in theaters right now. I would say people should give it a look because there is nothing else like it out there. And it's certainly, even though it doesn't capture what it's based on in its entirety, it does have more depth and more on its mind than just about every other comic book movie out right now, and certainly every comic movie that was made in 2003. I'm talking about Daredevil and Catwoman and you know all that. So yeah, it's worth seeing. I just
Part of it is it walked into this fight with this deck stacked against it. Honestly, walked into this card game, whatever you want to say, whatever metaphor you want to use, because we are talking about the only comic to ever win a Hugo Award. We are talking about the only comic. I think it's the only comic to show up on Time's 100 greatest novel American novels of the last 100 years.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of weight behind that. And I do not envy Snyder the task that he undertook. So, I mean, there has to be some props given for that. But at the same time, I'm not going to give it a pass because of that either.
Right. No, for me, it's a mixed bag. It's just a very uneven film. But, yeah, there's greatness in it. No question.
So, yeah. Okay. Did you want to say anything else in closing, Ethan?
I like the part with the boobs.
And that's why it's going to break $100 million. Honestly, if that scene had not been played for laughs, that could have been one of the most erotic scenes ever made.
Could have.
But it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
Okay. So, so you like that part where the T-Rex came in and ate Rorschach, huh?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And it was all a dream at the end?
Yeah, totally.
I called that.
Totally forgot that part. Okay. So, yeah, I'm really interested to see what kind of feedback people have. I've been reading around online. It's been getting a lot of mixed reviews. So it's a really interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this week.
Tony Goldwyn, the bad guy in Ghost, stars in the remake of The Last House on the Left.
Which you're not at all looking forward to, I know.
Not really, but you know, I am seeing it tomorrow.
Are you?
Yeah, I am. Hey, I got to write a review, so. Miss March, this week's buddy sex comedy movie.
Wasn't it like called Miss May or Miss April at one point?
Right, too? They changed it. Yeah, so Miss March will sell more tickets
because it's releasing in March.
Clever.
Okay. Sorry.
And on the other hand, the quality. This looks really great. It looks like a lot of fun. The Race to Witch Mountain, the remake starring Dwayne Johnson and the aforementioned Carla Gugino.
And you know, there's something like about The Rock that I'm willing to give it a spin.
Did you guys see him on SNL last night?
No. How was he?
He was really funny. He's always really good when he hosts it.
Sweet. Yeah, I saw him do it before, and he was terrific.
He's just got incredible comedic timing.
I can't wait to see this movie because the trailer was everything I wanted. It looks like it's going to be a kid's movie, but it looks like it's, you know, they're trying to, like, give us some good sci-fi action and something for everybody. So
yes.
Yeah. Well, the thing I'm scared, though, I think The Rock is turning into Brendan Fraser.
I was thinking Ice Cube.
But... I'll take Brendan Fraser over Tim Allen.
Oh,
so as long as he can go back and forth between stuff that has, you know, some integrity like Southland Tales and Get Smart with this kind of stuff. Yeah. What do you think?
He's just fun to watch. I wish he'd go back to the Rundown level of movie making because he could so easily be the next greatest action star ever.
If he did the Rundown now, I think it would go over huge. It's almost like he peaked a little too early with his action status, you know?
Yeah, because he can do it, and he's proving he has the timing.
Yeah.
So it's
got crack comic timing. He does. Next week's DVDs.
So it was good last week for this week. Mm. Next week.
Yeah, the previous week is one of the best ever. This week you've got Twilight, the 1 and 2 disc, Sparkle edition.
Yeah, I misspelled that, and that was just a joke, because, you know, only Sparkles are going to buy the 2 disc.
Well, but you can get your own material and bedazzle it, you know. So
and weren't you telling me there's a commentary or something? Like you can do your own text commentary?
Right. They did this on High School Musical 3, the DVD. And I guess, yeah, this is going to be a featurette almost on all DVDs now, where you could put your little text messages on the screen as you're watching it.
Yeah.
So you could say like, OMG, he is so cute, LOL.
Or you could do a text MST3K.
I forced myself to watch this.
Oh, you need to. You can actually watch it now.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's how.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't spend money on this.
This is one of the worst films of the year. Serious listeners, do not see this movie. On the other hand, a great film that did not get looked at or hardly even seen, even though it made over $100 million, but it lost a bunch of money. Bolt. Great movie. The voices of John Travolta and Miley Cyrus. This is a terrific CGI animated movie.
I'm looking forward to
movie.
Checking this out.
It's a great film. I highly recommend Bolt. Hysterical. Penelope Cruz and Ben Kingsley in Elegy. I've heard he's really, really good. My pick for last year's worst movie. God, this really is a bad week for DVDs.
I'm telling you.
It really is. Ray Stevenson and The Punisher, Warzone, 1 and 2 disc. Why you would want the 2 disc? I don't know.
Because you like to hurt yourself a lot.
Gosh, I will never watch this movie again. Never.
And then we've got like the throwback to the 80s.
Hey, I like the show. Mr. Belvedere, seasons 1 and 2. This is a remake, actually. There was an old movie called Sitting Pretty. This is a remake of. Mr. Belvedere, good show. Bob Uecker.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know. Wow.
You don't remember Bob Uecker? He was also in Major League 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, still kind of hurts a little bit. But that's okay. So if you don't want anything next week, load up on DVDs this week, and it'll get you through next week.
Yes, yes.
But in the meantime, we have a piece of mail.
All right. We love mail.
Huzzah. Why did I just say huzzah?
Wow. Huzzah.
Okay. Anyhow, this is from Joel. Says, hi, Screen Geeks. I hope you're all doing well and that none of you melted from the geek overload while watching Watchmen. Who watches The Watchmen? Screen Geeks. Sorry. Yeah, hey, I didn't put that there. I'm just reading the letter. Anyway, I was writing about a completely different subject, Woody Allen. Over the past year or so of listening to you guys, I've been trying to broaden my film palette. You know, trying to add a little film to my movie list. One of the directors I've been trying to watch more of is Woody Allen. The problem being, I really don't know where to start. I watched Vicky Cristina Barcelona and really enjoyed it. I also watched Cassandra and thought it was a little slow. And finally, I watched Mighty Aphrodite, which was a lot of film. So my question is, where do I go from here? Should I go back to the earlier movies or avoid them? Or just give up and watch Transformers over and over until I think a peeing robot is funny?
Definitely that.
At least film snob in training, Joel.
Joel. Well, I actually sent him an email back.
So did I. Yeah.
Excellent. Good. Yeah, I recommended Crimes and Misdemeanors, which is a mixture of his funniest and also one of his darkest films. That's kind of like a precursor to Match Point. Crimes and Misdemeanors is awesome.
I was going to say Match Point is one you have to watch.
Match Point is fantastic. Also recommended Manhattan, which is hysterical. It came out right after Annie Hall. I think it's a better movie.
Really?
Bullets Over Broadway with John Cusack is terrific. Yeah, so thanks. There's a big playing field you can go with.
And Annie Hall is very good as well.
Annie Hall won Best Picture. Yeah.
May I recommend one?
By all means. Please.
If you're listening to this, you want just a really flat-out funny one, I recommend Sleeper.
Yes.
I thought you were going to say Scoop for some reason.
Oh, God. I
actually kind of like that one.
Really?
Yeah.
But yeah, Sleeper is a terrific choice. You can't go wrong with the Orgasmatron.
Wow.
That's what it's called.
Okay, I haven't seen it, so.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Yeah, it's a machine you walk into and you have an instant orgasm. Yeah, it's great.
Wow. Yeah, we're not going to be talking about this over on War Pig Radio. Not at all.
No.
We'll be skipping that whole bit of things. And, you know, it is daylight savings time. I hope you set your clock ahead, otherwise you've missed it. But, you know, another way to put it is...
daylight savings time rules!
Because it really does rule. I've got too many Freakazoid drops, you know?
Hey, Dave, which number episode are we on now?
Oh, you had to do that to me. That is right. I wasn't ready for that.
What is it, Dave? What number?
69, dudes!
Yes!
Just for you, because we'll never get to use it again.
Thank you, Dave. That's
until
awesome.
We hit like 100, until we hit, hey, this is episode 100 and...
69, dudes!
Okay. Let's go ahead and put that sounder away for a while. It's all good. If you want to shoot us an email, by all means do. Hit us at podcastethanbarryjoshdave@screengeeks.com. We'll read your emails on the air, as you can see. And we have a new review coming up pretty soon from a fairly new writer, Miss Melissa. And she wrote a really interesting character study of Watchmen. So that'll be worth checking out. But I guess that'll be it. Next week, we're going to start our new series back up on talking about directors. We're going to start off with Preston Sturges doing Unfaithful Years. Should be a blast.
Excellent.
So, until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
This is Ethan.
Take it easy.
Terror grips a peaceful city. Terror that wears a loincloth.